This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yeheyesu Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
They're tired and they would like to have peace. Everybody wants peace, but we're hoping that this killing left and right come to an end so that Ammonians have peace.
That was Christopher Bella of the Cameroon Rights Group reacting to recent killings of civilians in Cameroon's troubled western regions. Details coming up. Also, the insurgency escalates near Mozambique's natural gas fields. And Zimbabwe's health care is getting worse as COVID-19 infections mount among frontline health workers. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Mozambique security forces are trying to retake a port at Mokimboa da Paraia in the country's north. Islamist militants seized the port yesterday. It is the latest escalation in the growing insurgency near Mozambique's natural gas fields. VOA's Jason Patenkin talks to journalist Yannick Machel in Maputo. Machel begins by explaining the latest information about yesterday's battle.
They captured and occupied the strategic port of Mozimbo da Praia. They also sank a boat. We're using RPG, a boat from Mozambican tuna company. It's called Ematon. They're also in control of the military barracks of the local navy. And the village is almost abandoned. The government issued this morning an official statement. About 59 rebels have been killed during the confrontations. But they did not issue any official statement about the casualties on the government side. But local people say that about 200 soldiers from Mozambican sides have been killed.
These are very large numbers, very large allegations of casualty numbers, especially suffered by the Mozambican army. How could that have happened?
They're using heavy bellic arsenal, heavy. And they're being supplied. They have a route of supplies, and the Mozambican side just got empty-handed. They were not properly equipped.
And why is that? Is there any indication as to why they weren't properly equipped?
It looks that there were some choppers which were supposed to supply the army from Mozambique, but the choppers had to go to the city of Pemba to refill and then go back to the place where the confrontations are taking place. So it took so long, and there was not much left.
Now, have the insurgents, the rebels, have they made any statements about casualties or about this fighting that took place?
They only issued some pictures of dead Mozambican soldiers in the field and a bunch of captured weapons.
And this isn't the first time that the rebels have tried to capture this town of Mozimbo da Praia. Is that correct?
Prior to this last attack, on the 23rd of March this year, they actually got in control of the town, but later they abandoned the town a few days later. But now they are in control of the whole village. They are in control of the barracks of the local navy, and they are in control of the port. That's the difference.
And can you explain why is this town so important?
Mozimbo da Praia is important for hosting the deep water port that is located less than 80 kilometers from Afungi Peninsula in the district of Palma, where a project to implement a natural gas liquefaction plant is underway. In other words, it is strategic district in the province that is currently the crown jewel in Mozambique. In terms of logistics for gas projects, estimated at over $30 billion. That's why Mozimbo da Praia is so important.
That was journalist Yannick Machel in Maputo speaking to VOA's Jason Patenkin. In Cameroon, there has been widespread condemnation of recent violence against civilians in the country's troubled western regions. In the past week, suspected separatists killed 13 civilians, including aid workers, with videos of beheaded women shared on social media. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
In videos circulated on social media in Cameroon, several men dressed in black order a young woman to lie down and then appear to behead her with a machete. The killers describe the woman as a traitor, an indication that they are Anglophone separatists. Cameroon authorities confirmed that a woman was beheaded on Tuesday in the southwestern town of Moyuka. It was the 13th such slaying in the last week in Cameroon's restive English-speaking regions. Last Friday, another woman was beheaded on video in the northwestern town of Bamenda. Her killers, seen in the video on social media, claim she was seen with a Cameroon military officer sent to fight the rebels. Christopher Bella of the Bamenda-based Cameroon Rights Group says such killings are becoming more common in the separatist conflict.
The people of the Northwest and Southwest have been hoping that somebody will come in and solve the Anglophone problem. They're tired and they would like to have peace. Everybody wants peace. But we're hoping that this killing left and right come to an end so that Cameroonians have peace. Right now, people are like living in the wilderness.
In Bamenda this week, two teachers were also killed. One was shot and the other stabbed to death. The rebels, who want independence from Cameroon's French-speaking majority, see teachers as targets for pushing Francophone dominance on the English-speaking regions. Cameroon authorities say the rebels are also targeting aid workers and have killed three in the past week. On August 7th, Tanjo Christopher, a pastor and aid worker with Community Initiative for Sustainable Development, was killed in the northwestern town of Batibe. Country Director for the Foreign Aid Group Plan International Cameroon, Miriam Castaneda, condemned the attacks.
We subscribe to the humanitarian principles of neutrality, impartiality, and independence. So it is really sad and painful that these things happen. However, we need to continue to promote the humanitarian principles. The only thing that we can do is continue to be optimistic that the situation will improve and continue to work with the people that need us so much.
Governor of the English-speaking Northwest region, Deben Chofo, says the rebels are attacking soft targets because they are getting weaker.
Those who are trying to disrupt public order in our region are going to face the might of our security forces.
Separatist spokesperson Capo Daniel admits that some fighters have attacked civilians, but he claims most of the attacks are by government-created armed groups to give the rebels a bad image. Daniel spoke in a message shared on social media.
In Bambili, where a human rights worker was arrested, we actually dismissed the soldier and we made it public. But the population have to also understand that there are traitors who have received money from the Cameroon military to carry out atrocity.
Cameroon's military has strongly denied any involvement in targeting civilians and aid workers. The United States Embassy in Yaoundé on Tuesday condemned the killing of aid workers and called for investigations to find and punish the guilty. The United Nations says Cameroon's four-year separatist conflict has left over 3,000 people dead and half a million displaced. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News. Yaoundé.
The massive oil spill from the Japanese-owned ship Wakisho in Mauritius may take a major toll on the island nation's tourism-based economy. Investigations are underway to determine the cause of the environmental disaster. For more, VOA's Jason Patinkin spoke to journalist Nad Sivaramen, who is director of publication to La Centellian Media Group in Port Louis, Mauritius.
The economic and social impact of this crisis is, It's very, very heavy. Purely from a monetary standpoint, they believe it will be in billions of rupees. The impact will be not only on the fishermen, pleasure craft, people who use the laguna to do their activities, but also on ecotourism, because the southeast has two major spots considered to be the places where we are trying to safeguard the endemic flora of Mauritius. Namely, we have a Blue Bay Marine Park, which is the house of thousands of different species of coral reefs and fishes, and the oil has started to go to Blue Bay. Also, there's Îlots Aigrettes, where we have endemic species of reptiles and birds, and also tortoise around the island. And these species, we are trying to save them. They are being transferred away, but a lot of coral reefs and fishes have already, vanished. And ecologists believe that it will take many, many years for the situation to go back to normal, to where it was.
Is there any information from the crew of the ship about what caused this disaster?
Mauritius, we are still, people that come from abroad, they have to go to quarantine centers. And so the crew and the captain, they are in a quarantine center. The police has already started its investigation. The black box from the Wakashu has been taken away, and the Mauritian police is trying to work with South African experts to try to understand what went wrong. What the investigators got from the crew is that they came close to the borders, to the reef, because they wanted to have an internet connection. Another crew member said that there was a birthday on board, and they were celebrating the birthday of one of the crew members. But this is yet to be determined, because a lot of people from different sources, they think it's not an internet issue. There might be something else, might be a gross act of negligence. We don't know.
The ship ran aground on July 25th. Do we even know why it was in Mauritius waters to begin?
It got into our territorial waters, not on the 25th when it crashed the coral reef, but it came into the territorial waters of Mauritius since 23rd, so 2 days before the crash. And no one knew. It did not signal its location, and the Mauritian authorities did not detect the presence of the Wakashu. Do we have proper radar in Mauritius? I don't think so. And people are now realizing that in terms of maritime safety and security, we still have in Mauritius a very long way to go. And the Wakashu brought all this into light. We don't have the means, the resources to protect our borders or to safeguard our waters.
That was journalist Nad Sivaraman in Port Louis speaking to VOA's Jason Patinkin. You're listening to Africa News Tonight. I am Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here is a recap of our top stories. The insurgency escalates near Mozambique's natural gas fields. There has been widespread condemnation of recent violence against civilians in Mozambique's troubled western regions. And the mass oil spill in Mauritius may take a major toll on the island nation's tourism-based economy. Thanks for listening to VOA Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. Zimbabwe's health crisis worsens as COVID-19 infections mount among frontline health workers. The country has over 4,800 confirmed cases with over 100 deaths. Adigando gives us more on the story.
Over 480 health workers have contracted COVID-19 in Zimbabwe, near 11% of cases recorded to date, according to the Minister of Health and Child Welfare. Those infected include doctors, laboratory scientists, nurses, nurse trainees, nurse aides, general workers, and pharmacists. Masimba Dean is the National Vice President of Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, ZHDA.
There is need, you know, to make them safe by providing adequate personal protective clothing, as well as incentivizing them with regards to remuneration.
Anele Bebe, a recent past Secretary General of ZHDA, says the situation in the country's hospitals is a powder keg.
Unfortunately, as you can see, that lots of health workers have already contracted the virus. 480 is a large number. So you must bear in mind that this 480 figure is for people who have been tested. We must also take this into perspective that probably we might see ourselves with very few health workers who'll be going to work, because most of them will be in quarantine.
Nurses are the hardest hit, with 37% of the confirmed cases among health workers. Nurses have been on strike for nearly 2 months, demanding personal protective equipment and salary payment in U.S. dollars. According to the City Health Department in Bulawayo, more than 100 nurses at Impilo Central and United Bulawayo hospitals have contracted the virus, forcing them into quarantine. Even though Siziba, Zimbabwe Nurses Association branch chair from Impilo, says that nurses are particularly vulnerable because they spend long hours with patients.
Instead, the supplies are going down. And if we check, like now, only a few nurses, especially those in the managerial task and those on probation, are the ones who are reporting for duty. You are just supplied one face mask a day. If you are like, you get a plastic apron on top of that. So we still hope and pray for better supplies, especially in Bulawayo hospitals. Engucheni, if you go at Engucheni, you find that they are using makeshift gowns which are sewn in the laundry department. And those gowns, they are not autoclaved. They will be used maybe and reused throughout the week. If they are lucky to be washed, they are going to be washed maybe once or twice a week. We are not ready, actually. Or we've lost the control for this thing.
Siziba says that health workers use public transport, risking further spread of the virus in the community. Dr. Bebe agrees.
Lack of protective gear will affect everyone, from health workers to communities.
Bebe says that health workers feel let down by government, but he warns the public is not taking heed of public health measures, including lockdowns, putting frontline health workers at risk. He deplores what he says is a lackadaisical wearing of face masks. The doctor says that public education about COVID-19 must be as relentless as the public health communications at the onset of HIV/AIDS in the 1980s. He says the public needs clear information on issues ranging from how to care for COVID-19 patients at home to addressing the stigma attached to the new coronavirus. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo.
The physical and psychological burden of caring for so many critically ill people who have COVID-19 is weighing heavily on healthcare workers around the world, including in South Africa. The country's hospitals are packed to capacity, while many South Africans are praising the sacrifices made by nurses and doctors. The pressures they are being subjected to are driving many to breaking point. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Psychologist Zama Mbele says healthcare givers often break down, ironically, when they seem to be at the peak of their performance.
So what we almost want to look out for is combat readiness that does not subside. Somebody who's always kind of on the edge, always ready to respond, and always feeling like they have a lot of energy in a pervasive way, in a way that doesn't rest, actually, and or switch off.
Just before the person crashes, as he puts it, Mbele says they'll generally behave in certain ways.
A great deal of irritability, impatience, a whole host of tempered responses, people not being able to sleep, people not looking after their physical health, people not even eating.
Johannesburg psychiatrist Antoinette Mirich is also seeing increasing numbers of healthcare workers as patients.
They're worried about vulnerable family members. They're worried about contracting the illness and bringing it home. And the guilt associated with that is huge. They're also worrying about infecting patients, because what if they end symptomatic and then they accidentally infect a patient, or infecting their colleagues. So there's a lot.
Cassie Chambers of the South African Depression and Anxiety Group says mental health issues remain severely stigmatized, especially with regard to professions such as healthcare.
Doctors are told that, you know, cowboys don't cry. Mental health is a weakness. So there's this stigma that they can't really say, hey, I need help, or I'm not coping, or I may be very anxious or depressed.
Bella says the doctor always hates becoming the patient.
One of the things that we know is that emergency services, doctors, police, there's no space to admit vulnerability, because oftentimes those are the types of jobs where you need to be the strong one and the hero.
He says the branding of healthcare workers as heroes because they're on the front lines of the war against coronavirus sometimes does more harm than good.
The way that we understand heroes is that they oftentimes have capes, they do not have weaknesses and vulnerabilities. And that narrative can really be put on individual nurses who are people, doctors who are people, even porters, that, well, you're a hero and so you're not allowed to be frightened.
As a result, Mbele explains, many in healthcare aren't able to allow themselves to step back from their work to rest, and so they end up endangering themselves and their patients. In representing doctors and nurses as heroes, he says, society could dehumanize them to a degree that it doesn't appreciate the risks they're taking and their vulnerabilities. Mirich believes the messaging of healthcare workers going into battle against the so-called unseen enemy is also potentially harmful.
We forget they're not soldiers. They're not willing to put their lives on the line. And they're humans just like you and me and everyone else. The majority of doctors, I mean, which I've spoken to, don't feel like heroes. You know, in fact, they might actually feel like lambs being sent to the slaughter.
Mirit says some of her patients who are doctors and nurses have told her they feel false, as if they're imposters, because they're often more terrified of the COVID wards than their patients. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's Newsmaker Interview Program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on the Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.